We'll be in chapter 2 tonight. Chapter 2. Two starts an interesting section. As we know, Solomon going down a lot of roads, okay, to deal with his idea of vanity. And is there profit in life? Is there meaning in life? Is there value in living day to day? And in chapter 2, he turns to a word is pleasure. And I think everyone involves and knows about pleasure. But this man, this king, this man of God wants to explain his views on it, explain the things that are perplexing and things that he wants other people to understand in his search for truth, in his search for meaning in life. And that's valuable to us today. There's a lot of people in this world that search for meaning, search for worth, search for something that is lasting in their lives, that they can have an impact in the world. And a lot of times they think about that, but don't put things into action. And that's what he eventually gets to in this book and throughout this book. Again, it's 12 chapters, fairly short. But he wants us to understand his mind. Of course, to understand his mind is to understand the mind of God and what he's teaching. In chapter 2, he turns to pleasures. Pleasures in life. And he thinks about, I guess, in verses 1 through 3, the stimulations of the body. And I'm going to use the word stimulation over and over. And in 4 through 8, he's stimulation of having possessions. Possessions, okay? And wealth. And what does that do for your view on life? And in 9 through 11, the stimulation of prestige. You know, sometimes when you have all the money in the world, and you're after power, aren't you? And that's akin to prestige. But prestige is the idea of people fawning over you. The idea that they say you are worthful in this life and that you have meaning in their lives. And we see that sometimes in people who do a lot of benevolence in the world, who may go through a life of much money, whether it's Rockefellers or Gettys or whoever it is. In their later lives, they turn to those things which try to benefit more and more people, whether it's building libraries, you know, in every city, or some big philanthropic organization that helps the poor or learning. They turn to that, again, to give them a heritage and to give them prestige. And it does among us in this life, it does offer that prestige. Now, in so that's 9 through 11. But is there meaning to their life when it's all said and done? Because when they die, they're remembered. But where are they? Where are they? They're in the grave. And we'll see also in some verses coming up that even though they've got these great riches, to pass on those riches is a worry of those. And there's some TV program that they deal with the great rich families of the world and this country. And back in the turn of the century in the 30s and 40s and 50s. And it was always a great worry of those fathers who raised those children. Would they continue the legacy? Would they continue with the idea of building the business? And sadly, a lot of those did not continue that business the way it was. and then they just wasted away, whether it's in drugs or pleasures in life. So there was a legacy is important. Now, so the meaning to that. Of course, the question always hangs over in 1:3. You know, all these works that we do, what's the value of those works? Can't take them with you. What are the value of those works? And is there a profit? Is there a life within them? Or is it just bankrupt? So that's one of the things we'll be looking at now. In verse 1 of chapter 2, I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility. He really starts off here. I'm going to talk to you about pleasure, but I'm going to tell you the end game first. But let's see what kind of examples he had. Because he's looking at this pleasure. You enjoy yourself. But his wisdom brought some grief and pain to him in chapter 1, which we saw, because he couldn't solve the issue. And Solomon turns to so-called pleasure or stimulation, and now in chapter 2. Now, I said to myself, that's an interesting group of words. I said, and other versions have, I said in my heart. And those are things that come from the inner being, okay? I'm talking to myself, I guess you would say. What am I going to do with this situation I'm in or I'm going to be in? I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility. You know, he's a man that wants to not fail. He's a man that wants to answer the question. And he's going to do that with sensual feasting maybe coming up. And keep in mind, now in verse 2 he says, I said of laughter. And this is one of the things he's going to start with on pleasure. I said of laughter. It is madness and a pleasure. What does it accomplish? What does it accomplish? And well, we know laughter and we know pleasure, but this is our madness involved, a mad pleasure. And he sees that in life, especially around those who are up in class, that people have, an overjoyous nature to them. Call it a wild party, if you think, okay? Where they have excess laughter and their foolishness. And, and they're doing things in this gathering that are just look foolish and laughter and gaiety and that sort of thing. What's the value in that? What's the value in that? And again, that fails to answer the question. Now, and he says at the end of that verse in 2, what does it accomplish? Well, if you think that, you know, wild parties and you do that sort of thing, is there any lasting value to that? Any lasting value? And really there isn't. You may have been stimulated for a few moments, a few hours. You may have a brief memory of it, or you may forget it. But it's brief, okay? And there's no lasting value to that. Now, in verse 3, I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine while my mind was guiding me wisely and how to take hold of folly until I could see what good there is in the sons of men under heaven. These are verses here that are interesting. And as you look at them, he qualifies this idea of wine with his body while my mind was guiding me wisely. And if you kind of look into this, you'll see that he really didn't drink to excess, to a loss of control over his senses. But the use of wine that he did have, he could sense the odor from it. He could sense it. It worked well with the appetite. That he observed camaraderie and parties, you know, with that. And so he's, again, looking at this situation. Now, I know some of you like coffee. Well, do you smell the coffee? Does it stimulate you? I've smelled coffee. I smell chocolate sometimes. Well, it's good to smell. And there may be other things. Oh, yeah, I forgot the ladies' perfume, okay, and the guys' cologne and that sort of thing. But we deal with odors from things that do give us pleasure, okay, enhance the situation. So I believe that's what he's talking about here, not drunkenness where he loses control. And again, keep in mind that he's observing, okay? He's participating, but he's observing too with wise, while my mind was guiding me wisely in that verse. And an interesting point too, at the end of verse 3, until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their lives. Look at his attitude. Until I could see what good there is for the sons of men. I see this as a point of why he's doing this thing, helping others, trying to guide others to learn the wisdom of worth in this life. And sure, you can experience those things, but he's thinking of others also. And that may be things that we need to think too. Of course, he still ends up, you know, that there's a no profit in it, no advantage. Now, he's had an idea in verse 3 that he's going to hold on to folly. And again, we got to remember that even though he wanted to observe these things, he wanted to keep a clear mind. He wanted to be deliberate, okay, in what he was observing and experiencing and observing others. Now, it says under heaven, which is under the sun, okay? Now, a king cares for his people. One who leads must care for the people that they oversee. I think that's a value system that he had, okay, as a king. Beginning in verse 4, we're going to see through these next verses that he had a wealth. He had a wealth that was really above imagination. People said, if you want all the money in the world, what would you imagine? He said, well, I can imagine a lot. And so he had all this worth. Now, wealth. And I just want to preface this with a discussion with God in 1 Kings 3:10. God was well pleased that Solomon asked for wisdom for the benefit of Israel, and not a long life for himself, and not great wealth for himself, and not for the lives of his enemies. And this is in that handout I had, just questions number 4 and 5. But here's the quote, 1 Kings 3:10. Now it was pleasing in the sight of the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said to him, because you have asked this thing, just for wisdom, and have not asked for yourself a long life, nor have asked riches for yourself, nor have you asked for the lives of your enemies, but have asked for yourself discernment to understand justice. Complimentary attitude, an attitude where he wants to reign correctly as a young king. Give me wisdom. Because I'm now all of a sudden I'm taking over from Saul and my father David, and I want to rule this country the best I can. Give me the wisdom. Please help me, God. And in 1 Kings 3:12, the follow-up verse is, behold, I have done according to your words, God says. Behold, I have given you a wise and discerning heart, so that there has been no one like you before you, nor shall there be anyone arise after you. I have also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there will not be any among the kings like you all your days. And in verse 14, and if you walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and commandments, as your father David walked, then I will prolong your days. Again, a conditional promise. Now back to our chapter 2, beginning in verse 4. Again, he's looking out at the things God has given him as a great king. I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. Sure, he had great houses. Remember the houses of cedar? It talks about that in Kings. Okay? And a great stature among the countries around here for what he built. And in verse 5, I made gardens and parks for myself, and I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. He's the king. He had this power. He had the wealth. He had the, I guess you'd say, the foresight to deal with gardens, deal with those things of nature, orchards and even almost paradise. I understand some of them are over there now, okay, where he's planted these and the legacy of those. But all kinds of fruit trees. I know when we were in Hot Springs last year, there's a place called Garvin Wooden Gardens. And I was amazed at out there up in Arkansas by Hot Springs, the gardens there that they had cultivated. And it was bequeathed, okay, a legacy by the previous owners who were timber people. And they had built a beautiful gardens there. And I can see that as you're walking through that, and the gardens and the coolness of the day and the shade. It is a pleasant place to be. So we had that in mind too. You know, if you think of those men and the pharaohs, what did they build? They build gardens? You don't hear about that. They build great monuments to themselves, and great monuments to for their burial. But this man looked at those sort of things as beneficial to himself and to those who walked in it. He used it wisely. In verse 6, I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. He was thinking about the future. You know, these growing trees would be a nursery of a sort. And he thinks about spreading this wealth of his, this knowledge of his, the nature of his. Okay, those places of peace and solitude for the people that served him, and he served them also. So just something that he thought about in that. Verse 7, I bought male and female slaves, and I had home-born slaves. Yes, we know slaves. That was what you did at that time, okay? It was acceptable. And do you think that he would mistreat his slaves? I wouldn't think so. I mean, that's conjecture on my part. But I think he wouldn't, okay? And the connotation of homegrown slaves is the idea that they were raised in his house. Commentators would think that that's a little more loyal, I guess you'd say, okay, than ones who were bought. But again, he had the best of the world, the best food, the best flocks, the best water. He had all those sort of things which God had granted him. And also in verse 7, also I possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. What can I say? Herds of flocks, okay? A lot of those are for the sacrifices. Who knows if he used those to help those who are in need. But he was a man of generosity. He was a man who had, again, this wealth granted to him by God. Verse 8, also I collected for myself silver and gold, the treasure of kings, their provinces, and provided for myself male and female singers, pleasures of many concubines. Collected silver and gold. Now, not just collected, but treasure of kings. These are one-of-a-kind items. These are items that were so special and so valuable that they would be in awe of those. If they found one of those today, it would be in awe. But he collected those things that were so great and perfect. And so that great treasure to him. There's idea, too, that, and it's true, that he collected great quantities of gold and silver. A lot of these great quantities were given to him by surrounding countries. And they respected his rule. Because remember that before his rule, there was great warfare in the land. And when he came into power, Solomon, peace reigned with him, with other countries, then with him, surrounding area. That's one of the things that God had granted him. So he had the peace, and they were grateful too. Why would you want war all the time? Okay? The great expense of that. Great food products. So he was the treasure of kings. He was a man, okay, that did those sort of things. Now, and he provided for himself male and female singers. Singing was good, okay? It was a matter that they couldn't tune into electronics or anything like that. But you get good singers. You know, if you've been to live entertainment, you know what singers are. You know what mediocre singers are. You know what good singers and good presentations are. And he collected those things. Only the best. Only the best. Okay? And the pleasures of many concubines. That's an interesting part there. It gets your mind to thinking a little bit, even though he had, you know, 1,000 marriages, I guess you'd say, okay, women. That does have some connotation, but in my research of the word concubines, if you put it in the context of singers, it's the idea of musical instruments, many, many sorts of musical instruments. I know that's quite an interesting transition, okay? But if you look at the word sources and that sort of thing, that is a strong possibility. And again, it fits with the idea of many singers. Any thoughts so far? You know, when we talk about these great wealth, would your satisfaction be with what he had? Would you say you reached the pinnacle of your life? Oh, if you had all that. The power, the prestige. Yes, Alex.
That's funny. I had the opportunity to actually ride with a man that was worth $4.6 billion at a time.
How many?
$4.6 billion.
Okay. Amazing. Good point, Alex. Alex, for the audio, he knew a man once that had great wealth and billions of dollars. And he lived a simple life, nothing extravagant, no great wealth of houses or cars or estates. And he viewed himself as just a man who works, a humble man. And I don't know if you knew his children, but maybe they were the same way, hopefully. Okay? And that's an attitude that we could have. I'm sure he was philanthropic of some sort. Okay? But he would also was a man, even though the great wealth, he didn't think he was above Alex. He talked with you. call him a man of the people, I guess. Okay? And that's a trait to have. Never forget where you came from and your parents came from. Yes, sir.
I guess maybe verses 4 through 8, I can just picture in my head of the old saying, money can't buy you happiness.
Yes.
Skip ahead a little bit. You got it all.
Yes.
You have things that men chase all their lives trying to fill a void in their heart. Riches, land, real estate, concubines, the things that men, modern day idols, they'll chase all their lives and put everything.
Very interesting. And that's a perplexing question that he has. And he wrote it for all eternity. Is that all there is? That's why we're instructed in Scripture that how do we live this life? We've been over it and we'll go over it again. Live each day enjoying the fruits that you have in your control that influence you. I may not have $1 billion, but Alex has a good wife. Alex is secure in his beliefs that he has. And those are things that bring joy to life. And he's perplexed somewhat too that other people don't understand that. So it's a way to live, a way to live. Okay? Good point. Yes, sir.
Now, you know, in this passage especially, he has a very singular focus. Pronouns are constantly I.
Yes.
I did that. What strikes me here, you know, we're talking about in the general sense, you know, there's nothing new under the sun, all is vanity. It's what advantage does a man have in all his work? What comes to mind, Alex and John both touched on it, is I should be selfish with my soul. That should be my priority. To fear God and keep his commandments. Because he said he's done all these things. And let's say this is in a time when Solomon is living a life that is pleasing to God, but he's talking about all the things that he's done and the wealth he's amassed. Has it not been good for the people? Has it not been a legacy that he's set forth? But what does it matter? The things that I ascribe, the notoriety that I gain, what does it matter? The power that I have. I think of what Christ said, and you know, they gain the whole world, but you may lose your own soul. We should be selfish with our soul. And application of that would be is, you know, we may get into a relationship where we're trying to save that person. You know what? My priority should be my soul first. Don't let them drag me down. I should prioritize my salvation before theirs. Doesn't mean I shouldn't care for them. My salvation first, by putting God first and living a life that's pleasing to him. If that means cutting ties because they're going to drag me down, so I should. Same thing with the job. Same thing with where I live. And here, it just it sounds so specific. It's so singular. I did all these things, and what did it matter? Because he's talking about the earthly, not the eternal. And I don't know, just what struck me, how specific he's thinking about all in singular. It just seems personal.
And the many eyes he had there, he did this. And it may be an indication of a change in his life, maybe an indication of his priority changes. It may be a lot of things. But the eye there stresses that no one did it. I did these things. And of course, that's my agency, okay, that he did these things. Again, if you had those powers, we would be selfish with our soul, as you said, Keith, that you have to shun those things, give them up, whatever you see that's conflicts, okay, with your end goal. Now, if the end goal is life under the sun, which is the great theme of the book, okay, if your end goal is just live life, I live and I die, well, you better make the best of it. You don't get a second go around. No reincarnation here. So that's the and good points. Good points about that. Selfish with your soul. Good point. Okay?
Jesus said in Matthew 6,
And I don't know if it was lasting or not. Okay? That's one of those great questions. Yes, yes. Yes, yes. Good points. Good points. In verse 9, now dealing with that prestige, then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. God didn't take away his wisdom. He still possessed it. And again, he viewed these sort of things as experiments. He studied these things for enjoyment and pleasures. He thought of his wisdom as kind of a self-restraint of a sort. And he justified these sort of things with, okay, I'm experimenting. I'm helping others. I'm expanding wisdom. What's the worth of this life? So the great things for him to think about is, again, he was living. Now, in verse 10, and all that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. And he says, eyes desired. I know some people that have got caught up in pornography. And it's ruined their families. It's ruined them. So you can get caught up with things of the eye. Okay? Of course, I'm going off on a moral angle here. But the idea of wealth, seeing what others have, being selfish, okay, and trying to achieve those things. And I did not refuse things of my eye, verse 10. And I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. For my heart was pleased because of all my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor. He set his mind to do all these things that he saw, all these things that he could experience, all these pleasures. And I think sometimes he had some control in that. He controlled himself when he experienced these pleasures, or let them not overwhelm him. Of course, this is later in life. And he's got this idea, this was my reward for all my labor, into verse 10. No, he had some reward. He viewed a reward. Maybe it was temporary enjoyment. Whatever it is, he saw some value in that. But he saw no lasting value in that. Do we see pleasure? Do we want to do things again? I'm about to trip. I'm going to Europe. Do I value that when I get back or more? Or do I value it more when I'm anticipating to go? Just a thought, okay? I'm going to a wedding. Do I value it more in anticipating it or when I get back? Okay. I'm going to a trip to Canada. Is the anticipation and the planning really excites me? Okay. Gives me pleasure to do that when the trip's over. Okay. And man, it went so fast, you know. So there's things in life here that we experience, that we plan for, that we say will give us pleasure. Okay. A long memory. But do we have a long memory? If you didn't have your wedding book and the audio, could you remember your wedding that much? Can you remember, you know, imagine the days when children, there was no photography. Did you have a record of 1-year-old and 2-year-old and those sort of things? So the memory is short on those kind of things. But, okay, they pleased us at the time. And hopefully that some of that pleasure will hold on to us for a while. But again, as he finishes here, all his labor, all his reward, okay, was fleeting, okay, to use John's word. Now, in verse 11, here we go. This is the conclusion of all this he's been talking about. Got a thus conclusion. I considered all my activities, you know, all my stimulation of the body and possessions and prestige. I considered all that, which my hands had done and my labor which I had exerted. And behold, all was vanity and striving after wind. And there was no profit under the sun. Boy, he put a lot of points in there. All the points. Okay? After all that we've talked about, all the accomplishments, all the experimentations, all the pleasures he had seen, all that labor, all the effort. Behold, all was vanity, empty, driving after the wind. Just a vapor that's here and gone. No profit under the sun. So nothing of that was useful, really useful. So that's how he concluded that part through verse 11. Now the next section, 12 through 17, he's going to talk about wisdom is fleeting also. And that death and the grave will overtake wisdom. You have all the wisdom you want, but the end of life, it's gone. You can set up great programs. You can be the best foreman, the best instructor in a college. You can have all the rewards. But when you die, gone. You can be the greatest president ever lived. Help so many. But when you die, it's over. So that's this next section we'll be dealing at. At verse 12, so I turned to consider wisdom, madness, and folly. For what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? And so he turned to that, wisdom and folly. Sometimes madness and folly is a mad folly. And he compares them directly, both of them. You can have this great use of your time. Okay, in wisdom, trying to apply wisdom, make correct decisions. But also you have the mad folly out there. So really the two extremes. And for what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? He sees that what happens after him is going to be the same. After him is all going to be the same. It's all going to be vanity. It's all going to be meaningless, I guess you'd say. And again, the end is the same, isn't it? If you have great wisdom or you live in mad folly, the end is the same. You die. You die. Verse 13, any comment? Comment. In verse 13 of chapter 2, and I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. Now he's comparing these two, the wisdom and this folly. And I guess what? They're totally different. They are totally different. And that wisdom is much better. Wisdom is much better, but. Verse 14. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. You know, a wise man, he foresees things, he reasons about things, he sees danger ahead. And the fool, the one in folly, he acts rashly, he's foolish, and no planning, gets himself in trouble. And guess what it says in the end of 14? And yet, I know that one fate befalls them both. And that's, I'm saying that's death. One fate, they both end up the same way in the grave. So really the field is level, isn't it? It was greater than, he said, wisdom's great, 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 greater than folly. But in the end, they're both the same. Equality. In verse 15, then I said to myself, as did the fate of the fool, it will also befall me. Oh. He's saying, oh, it applies to me now. It's going to hit me too. And all this wisdom I've tried to acquire, all this wisdom I've tried to impart to others in ruling this kingdom and helping others, as the death, the fate of the fool, it will also befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? Good question. Why have I been so wise? Why have I been striving? Not after the wind, but why have I been striving to help, to learn wisdom, to do the right path? Why have I been to be logical, okay, and not be completely foolish in life? And guess what he says? So I said to myself, this too is vanity. He's been deliberate. He's been not foolish. He's had self-control. He's left no stone unturned in seeking the value of life under the sun. But we all die. It all dies. It's all vanity. I strive in efforts, and it's all over. Verse 16. How close are we? Okay. For there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, inasmuch as the coming days all will be forgotten, how the wise man and the fool alike die. Making the same point that as generations come and go, that wisdom is forgotten. As people come and go, mad folly is forgotten. And in all the coming days, all will be forgotten. In other words, it's not being applied. It's not being brought forward. It's not being for the next generation. And we talked about that a little bit. And how the wise man and the fool alike die. So their folly of wisdom after death provides no profit, no advantage, no lasting value. So that's where he's at in his thinking at this point. Because we'll see that change. And we'll begin at verse 17 next time. Appreciate it. Please read. Okay? Thank you very much.